As I've mentioned previously, I want to do some more traveling. In this episode of the I Can't See You podcast, I'll talk about an upcoming trip, as well as some things that I learned at last week's Philly Meetup for the Blind presentation by a couple of seasoned blind travelers.
From Studio C, welcome to the I Can't See You podcast with David. He can't see, but he's got a lot to say and a face for radio.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 62 of the I Can't See You podcast. My name is David, at David Benj on all the socials, and I know I've mentioned this before, but remember, you can always check out the podcast on YouTube, and there's no video, of course, it's just a picture of the logo. So that would be youtube.com/David Benj, and I don't know why you would want to do it there and not just download it on your phone, but in case you do, it's there. And I do appreciate you checking out this episode wherever you're getting it from. And as I mentioned in the intro, I'm going to talk about traveling, and I've done a little bit over the last week or so, and I have a trip planned coming up. So last week, as I had mentioned previously, I was in Washington, D.C. for the first few days of the week, traveled back from there, got home on Wednesday night. Thursday night was a meetup for the blind presentation by a couple of folks who do traveling a lot, and they have other jobs. Their job isn't to travel, which would be very cool if it was. But they're blind, and they've been married for quite a while, and they go on, it seems like, more than one trip a year. So that was kind of cool. And they talked about traveling with and without guide dogs. They did not mention if the dogs ever have a say in where they go. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. And I learned a couple of great things there. And one of the other things that I learned, one of the other guys there who also did a little bit of the presentation, whose name is David, he splits his time between Philadelphia and Miami. And he was there, and I absolutely love his guide dog. It was a yellow lab. Oh my gosh, and I can't believe I forgot her name at this point. But this dog was so wild, and it was exactly the type of dog that I said to a friend of mine, I said, that's the kind of dog I want. I mean, this dog pulled the guy off the chair at one point, going after another dog, barking and stuff. And it was just, it was just great. It wasn't a very calm dog. And I thought, oh, well, maybe it's a puppy. And then we later found out that the dog was like 5 years old. So I just love that dog, and just what a good looking dog, and she was just full of energy, which I think was great. And then Sunday, so that was Wednesday and Thursday, and then Sunday, Liz and I went up to New York to visit Jane, and we went up for a couple of reasons. One was she was out of pasta sauce, and she loves Liz's pasta sauce, which for whatever reason she has not learned how to make on her own. And makes me think of that story with the man and the fishing bit, but I won't go into that now. And sorry for the noises from my chair. My chair just dropped about a foot. And the other reason was we were going to check out Jane's new apartment. She's going to be moving in a couple of months, and they're trying to sublet her room for the upcoming few months. But when she does move in, you know, she's going to need a couple of the pieces of furniture. And the other thing that we did while we were up there was, and I shouldn't say we, because I don't put stuff together. It was Liz. And so we did that. And, you know, of course, we walked around her new neighborhood, which is on the Upper East Side, 77th Street. And just what a great neighborhood compared to where she is now down in the financial district. Not that there's anything wrong with being down there, but that is a very quiet part of town off hours. As I've mentioned before, the Starbucks in her building closes at like 7 o'clock at night or 6:30 or something like that. And, some of the restaurants aren't even open on the weekends in that part of town. It's just kind of funny. And where she'll be moving is a very, residential with shops and restaurants, you know, whole bunch of all sorts of great places to go. And, don't get me wrong. The place that she's living in the financial district is a luxury high rise. Very nice. Now, again, as I've also mentioned, she doesn't have a proper bedroom. She's in what is the living room with a temporary wall, that they do. And again, they're called, it's a one bedroom flex. So there's three people in a one bedroom apartment with these temporary walls up, which you can hear all sorts of things because the walls don't go all the way to the ceiling because of fire code. And, it'll just be nicer for her, even though the apartment, is an older building. I think it was built in 1910, And, you know, her bedroom is a great size. It's probably about the size she's in now, but it's a bedroom and it's got a closet. You know, so it should be nice. And then there's a little bit of a living room, dining room section, a little kitchen. Kitchen's not nearly as nice as the one in the building that she's in now. But again, it's a kitchen that will be functional. And the bathroom is very tiny in her new place. In the place she's in now, it's, you know, it's very nice. So it'll be nice to see when she moves in there. And she was very excited about it because her commute was going to stay about the same. But she found out since she signed the lease that her company that she works for, which now she works in Midtown on Madison Avenue, they're going to be moving down to the financial district. So for the first few months she lives in her new place, you know, the commute will be about the same, around 15, 20 minutes on the subway, and then a little bit of walking before you get on the subway and a little bit after. Once the company moves and they're moving down to One World Trade, she would have been able to walk to work in around 10 minutes had she stayed in the building she's in. That probably wouldn't have been good for her health, though, because it's, you know, again, like I've mentioned in the past, she's just had all sorts of issues with one of her roommates there, and it's just not a comfortable situation, and there's not a real common area there other than the kitchen. And it's just every time we go in there, it just never feels like any of them have moved in. You know, and it's sad, again, because it's a very nice building, and they have those grills on the roof, which, of course, were awesome, which I don't think Jane's new building has even any kind of roof thing going on. So we got up there, and you know, we drop, of course, the important stuff. We drop the sauce off at Jane's current place where she lives, and she puts it in the freezer, and she's got 6 servings now of the sauce in individual containers. And then we jump on the subway and we go to the Upper East Side, which from the Financial District to the Upper East Side, roughly about 30, 35 minutes on the subway. And, you know, it's not terrible to go, but you do. At one point we did switch. And by switching, we basically got off the train at one side of the platform and walked across to the other side. But again, you know, when you're commuting, if you just miss that subway, you know, that's going to could add anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes to your trip, which doesn't sound like a lot, but over the course of a week or a year, you know, when that happens every time, obviously your commuting time is longer. So we had our tools in hand and we go up to her new place, which, like I said, she'll be moving in, I think it's July, she'll be moving in. And all of a sudden there is hammering in another apartment here. I don't know if you can hear that or not, but holy cow, that's driving me crazy. you know, so we get to her new place. By the time we got there, though, it was lunchtime, brunch time, whatever you want to call it. And Liz could not work while hungry. So we went to eat first and then we came back to do that. And again, that gave us a feel for the neighborhood. A few blocks up, at 80th and 3rd is Eli Zabar has a couple of businesses. One is a flower shop, one is a market, and one is a restaurant. I don't remember what the restaurant was called, but we had brunch there. I think we all liked it. Her new roommate, Shannon, who's a friend of hers from Pace, also went with us. So we ate there and then again, walked around the neighborhood a little bit and then went back and got to work. And, you know, when we were walking around, we went into the market. You know, Jane has one market close to her where she is now. That's maybe a 10-minute walk. And she actually just found it. She used to think it was just a place to get some hot food, but then she realized when she had gone in and she started looking around, they also had, you know, groceries and things like that, which has made her life a lot easier because she would walk over to Whole Foods, which is probably about a mile away, not an easy way to get there other than walking. So if the weather was bad, you know, she's dragging her shopping cart and, you know, all the way over to the Whole Foods and back. So it'll be nice once she is uptown in the Upper East Side, because not only is there Eli's Market, there's another shop even closer. So, you know, combined, depending on the prices, and let me tell you, in Eli's Market, the stuff was not cheap. Lemons, which I always gauge everything by the price of lemons, because, you know, I put lemons in my iced tea and I use a lot of them. Liz usually gets them at a farmer's market here in our area called Gentilly's, and they're roughly, you know, $5 for $1.29, $5 for $1.79, depending on the they're closer to going bad or not, I guess, or the size of them. And usually it's always 5 for a certain price, and it's usually under $2. Obviously, in the supermarkets around here, you know, I know one of the markets carries them, and they're usually like 4 for $2 or something like that. So roughly, you know, 50 cents there. You know, Whole Foods up in New York isn't terribly expensive for them. I think they're 65 or 70 cents. The market, the lemons in Eli's market were 2 lemons for $3. Now, they were pretty big lemons, and to me that's pretty steep. However, the quality of the stuff that they had in there, both the produce and the cheese and the meats and everything, you know, it was definitely high quality stuff. That is not to say that the baguette that we got from there was as good as a place called Le District. And Le District is a place down in Brookfield, which is down, I don't think it's considered the financial district, but, you know, maybe Battery Park. And, you know, it's a mall right along the edge of, you know, where you can look out and you see the Statue of Liberty. If you go to the website, if you go to icantseeyou.com, there's a picture of Liz and I that has the statue in the background way off in the distance. But that was taken at Brookfield. The baguette at Eli's, $5 and change. The baguette at Le District is, you know, around $3 or $3.25, something like that. And again, the one at Le District, so much better. But, you know, it was nice walking around and looking and seeing what's available to her and so close, so that she doesn't have to spend all that time if she needs, you know, a head of lettuce or something like that. She's going to pay a little bit more, you know, maybe almost as much as she would pay at a convenience store. But again, the quality is going to be top notch there. And like I said, there's two markets very close to her within probably a 5 to 10 minute walk. She can get to two places, you know, so we looked there and, you know, then we headed back to her apartment so Liz could get to work and build the stuff that needed to be built. As she emptied the box and she started to pull out all the parts, it kind of reminded me of what someone had said to a friend of ours a few years ago. And this is a person that we had met that didn't really know us too well. And again, you know, if you were to see me in a social situation in someone's home, I wouldn't necessarily have my cane on me. So you might not even know that I can't see. We were talking about, we had to put something together, or I guess our friends were talking about having to put something together and that Liz was going to do it. You know, the person said to our friend, "Oh, why isn't her husband going to do it? Is he going to be out of town? Is he going to be doing something?" No, he can't see. So she's going to do it. So, you know, when he told us this story, you know, I don't put stuff together because I can't see. It's just not my thing. You know, my dad couldn't do it. My dad could see fine. My dad, you know, could do a lot of different things. And, you know, everybody has a little bit, you know, everybody can do certain things and other, you know, some things they just can't. And it just made me laugh as you know, so were they dissing me because I can't see and put stuff together? Were they dissing Liz because she's a girl? They didn't think she'd be able to put stuff together and whatnot. And this, the thing that Liz was putting together was a cabinet that was going to hold their TV. The TV was going to sit on, and it was just like a shelving unit that had a couple of shelves. One was adjustable, one was not, and it was just bigger than the thing that they had there to hold the TV. And they were worried that the TV was going to get knocked off of the thing that they had there. So Liz put that together, and Jane's friend and future roommate helped Liz while I sat on the couch. I probably fell asleep for a minute, And Liz got it together and put it together. And then I helped Liz. We were hanging a few things. So I was holding it so Liz could measure or, you know, put holes, you know, so she wouldn't see where to put a hole to hang stuff. And then there were a couple of little shelving units that they wanted to hang on the wall. And, you know, I held them in place so Liz could mark it. That's the extent of me building or doing things like that. It's just, you know, again, it's not because I can't see. You know, one of the things that they have at the Colorado Center for the Blind, which is one of the three National Federation of the Blind training centers, is a full workshop. And I have to tell you, you know, we made furniture for salons in our business, and I was always terrified of going in there when the table saw was going. And, it's just not something that I'm comfortable doing. I'm creative, but I'm creative in other ways. I don't want to build furniture or, put stuff together like that. And it's just not anything that I've ever been good at and enjoy doing. We had the video store, and, you know, we used to have these intricate displays that you would see, and you still see them at the movies now, where, you know, for upcoming movies that are coming out, it'll have, a big cardboard thing with, you know, some of them were more intricate than others. Some of them, it was basically just, you know, like folding a couple of things and, so it would stand up on its own. Others were, you know, had, you know, shelves on it and would be like a shipper where you'd sell actual movies out of. I could do the easy ones of those, but for the most part, a manager or someone else would do it. And I remember we had the first manager we had at the video store. Her name was Maria, and may she rest in peace, because she died a while back. But she was great at doing that. She had no trouble doing it and enjoyed doing it. And same thing with Liz. You know, she can do it, so she does it. I remember when I got a bike once, you know, my dad, of course, didn't even want to attempt putting it together. So, you know, he got a friend or someone else to do it. And I rode my bike. And again, it's not something that I can't do because I can't see. It's probably in my DNA not to be able to do that. I could come up and do some other things, but not that. And so I think it's funny how some people, think, oh, that guy can't see, so he can't do this or that. Listen, I am not going to jump in a pilot seat in an airplane and try to fly it. Although someone in the last week or so has friended me who is a legally blind airline pilot. So I think that's kind of cool. But again, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, especially for an airline, because now you've got not only your own life and, you know, somebody on the ground you may crash into, but you've got a bunch of people on board that you may also kill. Not comfortable with that. So I'll leave that to someone else. So we did that. We hung out at that it's so nice that she's going to have a proper room and it's in an area. It's not far from the subway. It's a shame that she's going to have such a long commute now, because as I mentioned it, you know, her commute now is like around 15, 20 minutes on the subway and a little bit of walking before and a little bit of walking after. You know, once she moves, it's going to, and the business moves, it's going to be, a little bit of walking. And the nice thing is the subway station is very close. It's, I want to say it was 2 avenue blocks away, or maybe it was only 1 avenue block, 1.5 avenue blocks in New York, as I think I've mentioned before. An avenue block is a lot longer than going from, let's say, 77th to 78th Street. There are 7 avenue blocks roughly in a mile. It's very close. So there's not much commute time there, but then she's going to spend probably 25 minutes to 30, 35 minutes on the train, on the subway. And like I also mentioned, she's going to have to get off and change trains. So there's going to be a little time in there. So she's looking at anywhere a 35 to 45 minute commute once the business moves at the end of the year. And so that part, that's kind of sucky for her. But again, area that she's in is very nice. Restaurant right downstairs below them, an Italian place that I know she and her roommate the future roommate's family had eaten at a couple of weeks ago when she first moved in. And so many things close by. It's just so awesome. And so that'll be good. So when we were walking back to the subway, I don't know if you're familiar, when you see there's stairs all over, you know, to get you downstairs into the subway. And I don't know. And I asked Jane when we were going down, I said to her, how would I know which set of stairs to go down? Because you go down the wrong ones. Instead of going downtown, you're going uptown. And she didn't know how you would know from the outside. I think once you got downstairs, you would know, hopefully before you swiped in, You know, and I thought that would be a tricky thing for me, just like I've mentioned in the past, just getting out of the subway and some of the stations where, you know, it's kind of like a maze to get out. And then you don't know where you're going to be when you do get out. And you may be a block or two from where you thought you were going to be and stuff like that. Now, some of these stations, especially the one that we got out at on 77th Street, was, you know, basically an easy exit. You know, it might have been a difference of coming up on the wrong side of the street or something like that. But that part was easy there. The hard part is, you know, when you go downstairs, how do you know which way they're going again when you can't see? So that's one of the things we talked about in the Philly Meetup for the Blind presentation last Thursday. And I'm guessing it's going to be something that I experience when I do travel down to Orlando in a couple of weeks. And you know, one of the things that they mentioned that we talked about, and I learned at the Philly Meetup for the Blind, they talked about using a service called Aira, and I'll put a link in the show notes because Aira is something that it's kind of like having it's you know, if you think of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, it's the phone a friend part of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, except this friend is trained on how to help you and guide you. And not only are they seeing what you see with, or what you would see if you had sight through your phone's camera, they also have a map to show them where exactly you are. So they're seeing both things, and, you know, they could guide you to a restaurant, they could guide you to your luggage, they could guide you to the restrooms in the airport. In most airports, it doesn't cost anything. And it does come, Aira, when you're not at an airport or a Target and some other businesses, Aira is kind of pricey. But again, they're employing these people that, you know, first are trained. And, you know, if you need to read a bank statement, these are the people you want to read it. You don't want to use one of the other apps where they just have volunteers that do it. Because who knows what will happen to your information. And of course, you never know who's going to have and what they're going to do with your information. But at least with Aira, you have that little bit of that level of security. And maybe, you know, maybe it's not as big as I think it is, but it's just much more trustworthy. And again, you have to pay for stuff like that. And as I've mentioned before, stuff for blind folks, just to make them able to do things that sighted folks do, it costs a lot of money. If you can think back, if you're old enough, if you can think back to when mobile phones first came out and first started to explode in the 1980s, I had a bag phone, if you guys remember those. And it was very cool that I had a bag phone because I didn't have to have it in any one car. If I was in this car, I could take it. If I was in that car, I could take it. It wasn't like a car that, you know, if you remember when they first came out, they were just installed in a car and you had an antenna on your roof. And it was a big deal. And the bag phone was just one where it had two suction cups on an antenna. You stuck it on the window, plugged the phone into the cigarette lighter. I mean, it sounds so primitive now. So I had a bag phone and you had a certain number of minutes you could use, and it was always free after like from 9 at night until like 6 or 7 in the morning. It was free to use. You could use as many minutes as you wanted and on the weekends, but during business hours or extended business hours, like 7 in the morning until, you know, 8:59 at night, that's when, you know, if you had a 30-minute plan, that's when the meter ran. And you know, a 30-minute plan may have been, I just don't remember. I want to say 15 or 20 bucks, maybe more. So if you were a heavy user during those early days of mobile phones, you know, you were paying quite a bit of money. And and that's what Aira is kind of like. The plans are, you know, similar to a mobile service. And but again, it's invaluable. And I know I'm going to be using it when I'm in the airport because I'm going to be going on my own. I'm kind of interested to see how it's going to be to get through like TSA on my own. You know, I just have this, my biggest fear, and you'll probably laugh at this. My biggest fear is when I take my shoes off and I have to walk from, you know, where you put the shoes on the belt and then you walk through the, you know, the magnetometer, and then they swab your hands, or they, in my case, they also swab my cane. My feet, as I've mentioned before, you know, with the psoriatic arthritis, always hurt. And so I don't even walk around my apartment in bare feet unless I'm getting into the shower. Obviously I don't wear shoes in the shower. Not yet, at least. You know, so my biggest fear that somebody's going to step on my foot, or I'm going to step funny on something, or I'm going to bang it into something. And, you know, like I said, they hurt all the time. So just a little tap will, you know, put me into agony. So, you know, that's my biggest fear. I'm not worried about too much else. I'm not worried about finding the gate. You know, I figured I'll find it, and, you know, maybe somebody will help me, and, you know, maybe they won't. And, you know, I know there's always people willing to help if they see me wandering around like I'm lost. I'm sure somebody will come up to me and say, hey, you know, what are you looking for? So I'm interested to see how that all goes down, because my flight is so unbelievably early on that Wednesday, March 4th. Liz is not going to take me because she's going to have to get to school, and I don't know that there would be enough time. And obviously, she certainly couldn't walk me to the gate anyway. So, you know, I'll probably just take an Uber to the airport. And again, I, as I've mentioned earlier in this episode, I'd like to do stuff on my own. And, you know, some blind folks consider taking Uber cheating, and it kind of is, because you can call and they come right to you, and, you know, you don't have to find a bus stop and wondering if you're standing at the right spot. You know, and I kind of agree with that. Same thing with Ira. It's kind of like cheating, you know? I mean, you know, if I call Jane and, you know, FaceTime with her, and I point my camera around and say, hey, where's gate, whatever, you know, okay, not as much cheating. I'm not using professional help. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to working my way through the airport, both in Philadelphia, and then once I get down to Orlando. And let me just touch on the airplane thing again. You know, if you remember the episode where I talked about going to Las Vegas over the summer and flying American Airlines, who completely screwed us over, having us miss half of the convention that we were going to. Unfortunately, in Philadelphia, American Airlines has it's some crazy amount of the gates. And I want to say it's like 70% or something like that. And don't quote me on the actual number, but it's that high. It is that high. And because it's that high, it limits our options. Me, because, you know, even though I considered American for a minute, I started thinking, do I want to trust them again to get me there? What if I can't get there that first day and I have to wait 3 days? If I have to wait 3 days, I'm only going for four. So I just didn't even want to consider it. It got to the point where the timing isn't great on the flight that I'm taking, as I mentioned, 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, I considered flying out of BWI so I could fly on Southwest, because the Southwest flights into Philadelphia coming home were all sold out in the reasonable price, in the reasonably priced category, which is whatever they call it. I don't remember. I want to get away, I think, but not 100%. You know, I could have flown home and spent $500 on a return trip, which I just didn't want to do. It made it just too expensive to do. So when I looked into flying out of BWI and I figured everything into it, you know, the train, which is about $40 from Philadelphia to BWI. And, you know, I thought, well, that extra $100, it's, you know, it's just not worth it. I'll just fly at the inconvenient times. And, you know, that would be the price wise would be the best thing. And coming back, it's not terrible when I'm flying home, because I'm flying, I leave Orlando at like 8 o'clock or something at night on Sunday, which the conference pretty much ends at like 3 o'clock. So I'll be able to hang out there and talk to anybody they may have met or wanted to meet. You know, all these great podcasters that I follow are going to be there and stuff like that. But, you know, American Airlines was not cheap flying out of Philly. They have, like I said, so many gates. And you know, had they had a decently priced flight to and from Orlando, you know, I may have considered it, but nothing was reasonably priced from them. And again, they had, you know, Southwest had like two flights each day. to and from Orlando. Frontier had, I think they only had one flight each day. They may have had two, one in the morning and one at night. And the airline that I'm flying, Spirit, which I've flown before and didn't have a great experience. It was 25 years ago. Jacob was a baby, and we actually bought a ticket on Spirit for him so we could put the car seat. You know, he was a little baby in one of those backwards facing car seats, and in the car it's backward facing. On a plane it was front facing, and evidently he was kicking the guy's chair in front, and the guy kind of freaked out halfway through the flight instead of just turning around earlier and saying, "Hey, could you have him stop kicking the chair?" But you know, so I'm flying Spirit, and I'm leaving at that crazy time in the morning, and I'm not sure 100% what I'll be doing in Orlando for most of that day, because there are no events that day. You know, I do have some friends down there. Number one fan Dan is down there, so you know, hopefully I'll get a chance to catch up with him. Dan is a friend of mine who we had started digital graphics design together back in 2004. So I hope we get a chance to connect while I'm down there. I also have some friends that I went to high school with and live down there. And most of the friends that I have down there, other than Dan, does not. Dan goes there often enough to Disney. But most of my friends from high school that I still keep in touch with work at Disney in various different positions. So hopefully I'll get to maybe catch up with them as well. And you know, but I have the whole day, and don't tell me, "Oh, you can go to Disney for the day." I don't want to spend that kind of money to do that, because I just don't enjoy it that much. There are a few rides that I would certainly jump on, I guess, and there are some things. You know, I love Epcot and the different countries that are there. But you know, I'm not psyched about doing it. I think I'd rather go to, maybe there's going to be a spring training game close by I can go to, or maybe a museum. I'm not sure. I haven't looked enough into it to know. And, you know, and I guess if need be, you know, I could just go to the hotel once I can check in and just hang out there, maybe go to the pool or something. That sounds a little boring though, right? I'd rather do something, I think. Well, I'll let you know. I'm sure there's going to be at least one podcast from my trip to Orlando, maybe two. But I'm just interested in knowing how it's going to be for me. And that brings up another thing, you know, going to this podcast, PodFest Multimedia Expo. You know, it's going to be hard for me to do on my own. And Chris, one of the organizers of the event, who I believe I met a few years ago at Podcast Movement when it was in Philadelphia, I asked if they could provide someone that would, you know, basically help me get from one place to the other. And, you know, once I have the rooms down, I think I'll be okay. The big thing for me will be, you know, in any kind of learning situation, you know, PowerPoint's involved. Well, PowerPoint to me, you know, means nothing because I can't see it. And, you know, if a person is not speaking what's on the screen, I don't know. And you know, the reason presenters don't speak everything that's on the screen is because they're talking about something else. They're kind of hitting you with a couple of things. Maybe they're talking about a case study and then showing the results of that case study on the screen. You know, so that's going to be tricky, you know, finding out where I can get the slides. So if you are in the Orlando area and you know of someone who would be interested in being my assistant, this is non-paid, but you would get into PodFest Multimedia Expo for March 5th through the 8th. You know, let me know. Give me a call at the previous mentioned number or icancupodcast@gmail.com, icantcupodcast@gmail.com. Remember, it's only 7 letters long, I can't see you, but it sounds like a whole sentence. So if you know someone, maybe a college student or somebody who's interested in starting a podcast, this would be a great way to learn something. You know, of course you're going to learn what I learned because you have to go with me. So that might be a drawback, just having to go with me. But if you are down there in the Orlando area, I do have a pass. So you'd be able to go to all the events, with me and it would be very helpful to me as well. So please let me know. You know, the other thing that I had mentioned earlier that I've not been afraid of, but, you know, like I mentioned in last week's episode, You know, when I'm not holding onto my bag or my bag's not leaning up against my leg, you know, I can't, it's not easy. Stuff like that is not easy for me to find, and I get a little nervous. So I'm going to give my suitcase to someone, and it's going to go somewhere else on an airplane. And then I'm going to have to find it on the way, you know, once I get to the other end. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that the folks who presented last week talked about was this thing called SLATE. And basically it is this, it is this thing that I think they were originally developed so you could find your keys when you put them down somewhere and you can't find them. And so they put it inside their bag or on their bag so they can easily find it. You know, you pull out your phone, the phone tells you where it is. You know, I may do that. I'm not 100%. I got a couple other tips. Tom Brown, who I did NFB Newsline training in Baltimore, said what he does, and he has a little bit of vision like I do. My suitcase is black, so I'm sure there are the majority of suitcases that come off a plane are dark, whether it's black or dark blue or dark brown or whatever. So I'm not going to be able to tell that way. It's not like the suitcase we bought for Jacob when he went to Japan back when he was in high school. This suitcase was so hideous looking. You knew no one else was going to have it. And funny story was, at some point in time, we were at an airport collecting either we had gone somewhere with this suitcase, but somebody else actually did have that same suitcase. It was, it, if you just think of wallpaper from the 1970s, you know, florally, and that's what it looked like. So what Tom had suggested, and someone else at the event last, the Philly meetup for the blind, had suggested, you know, putting something on it. Tom uses a bandana, brightly colored bandana, and ties it on the handle. So you can hopefully spot that. You know, some people had suggested, you know, painter's tape that is, you know, it's not just that blue color anymore. Sometimes now they have, you know, different colors. So maybe something like that. So I'll probably try that. And of course, what I'll do is before I hand my bag over, I'm going to take a picture of it. So when I do get to the airport, if I can't find it on my own, you know, I can go up to someone, whether it's another passenger or somebody that works at the airport, and say, hey, here's what my bag looks like. Can you help me find it? You know, and that's, you know, listen, I'm going to have all my stuff is going to be in there with the exception of what's in my backpack. You know, so, you know, that was one of the things I was glad to talk about that last week at the meetup, you know, because it is one of the concerns. Now, I did mention earlier on about this guy named David who was had traveled from Miami and also helped out in this, presented this, this meetup in his dog. And I've always said, and you know, a million times I've said that I do not have a guide dog, and I don't know that I would ever get one. You know, some people have told me, oh, you'd be fine with it. You would learn to, you would be trained as well. Meaning, you know, you don't play with the dog when they're on the harness, and you know, we're not talking about an emotional support dog. We're talking about a service animal, and I have learned that those are two different things. And different classifications, which I think is kind of funny. But I always thought a dog that I had would, you know, would get hurt, you know, because of the way I am. And, you know, and I don't know what my power is over the, over these poor animals, but I can get a dog revved up like you wouldn't believe. And I don't know how I do it. And, you know, I was at, Liz and I were at a friend's house, day before Thanksgiving, our friends have a little get together and they have a dog. And I was just leaning over and petting the dog and patting it on its side. All of a sudden the dog was all revved up and ready to go, ready, jumping all over me. And Liz is yelling at me and, you know, and the dog's owners are yelling at the dog. And I'm thinking, man, what did I do? So I don't know what I do. Maybe somebody should watch me when I'm, you know, completely just stop and watch and see how it happens. And that's how I like, you know, I like dogs all revved up. I mean, I wasn't trying to get this dog all revved up, you know, at the thing. And so, you know, so David's dog was just, you know, there was a little dog there that drove his dog crazy. And at one point she bolted for him and pulled him off his chair and she's jumping around. And, you know, afterwards I had gone up to him. I said, oh, you know, she's a puppy, huh? Oh no, I've had her 4 years. So she's about five. And I thought, oh my God, And I kept telling a friend of mine who was there with me, I said, I said, that's the kind of dog I want. And that's, you know, I don't know who would be worse in that situation, you know, me or the dog, because, you know, there were times that he was really holding the dog back from going after another dog. And, I gotta be honest with you, I wouldn't have been able to find the, door in had that dog not been barking, because, you know, I was walking down the street. You know, they had told us to, when you get an Uber and, you know, where the meetup was, wasn't near public transportation. So I took the train into Center City, Philadelphia, and then took an Uber the rest of the way. And so, you know, they tell you to put the restaurant in that's a couple doors down because, you know, it's much more noticeable. There's a big blue awning evidently over it. And so I put that in, and, you know, even the Uber driver said to me, he said, oh, well, you know, you just have to, you know, get out of the car and turn to your left and you'll be under the awning and then you go straight in. I said, I'm not really going here. I'm going a couple doors down. So as I'm walking down the street on the sidewalk, I'm thinking, man, am I going to find this place? Cause it's night out and it's, you know, it was dark. I didn't know if there were any signs. And then I hear the dog bark, and her barking led me to the door. So, you know, again, was a pretty wild dog, and I thought she was great. So, you know, again, I, you know, not really allowed to have dogs here at the condos. Obviously a service animal, you know, they would have to allow. I am president, so I could probably change that. But, you know, maybe someday, maybe once we move to a warmer place, or we have a, you know, place with a yard, not really a yard here in the condos in a mid-rise. So I'm looking forward, you know, to doing the traveling. Like I said, Liz will not be going with me, as I mentioned, because of work and school, which is her work, with those little monsters. I guess that's probably not nice to say either for those little kids, but I mean, they really are. They really are nuts sometimes. And it's kind of funny. And there's another example of, you know, people not being able to, looking at me and saying, oh, he's blind, he can't do this. I have to be honest with you. If you went and you stood in that classroom, I am telling you, more women would have an easier time dealing with all those kids and the lunacy that goes on in there, that Liz and her partner Barb take care of, than guys. You know, could some guys do it? Of course they could. Could some girls not do it? Yeah. But for whatever reason, you know, it's to me, it's crazy stressful to be in there with all those kids running around. Now they do like to talk to me about my cane and stuff when I do go visit. So it's kind of funny. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to reporting back to you. It won't be for a couple of weeks, but I'll talk to you about Orlando and all the cool things I did and what good things happened on the way and what bad things happened. And we'll have an episode in between there, though. Actually, maybe two episodes, because I don't get back until Sunday. I usually record on Wednesday for release on Thursday. I'm actually recording today because I had some technical issues yesterday, but I'm glad that you were here. And again, I would appreciate if you rated and reviewed the show. That helps us grow. If you haven't already, please subscribe. And remember, any links that you see are affiliate links. That means when you click them, I will get a little bit of a commission. That keeps Liz in her chai tea lattes or whatever else she wants to have. And you don't even have to look for a link now. I've set it up so you can just type icantseeyou.com/Amazon. So remember, I can't see you, 7 letters, sounds like a whole sentence, icantcu.com/Amazon. That will take you to Amazon. Anything you buy, once you do that, I'll get a little bit of a commission, and it'll help us out, and I do appreciate that. And again, I appreciate you checking out this episode and all the other episodes. And you can get back episodes of the I Can't See You podcast over at icantseeyou.com. All 62 are published there, and you can have a look there. Anything you missed, you can catch up in the show notes, which I should have in a day or two. And again, I appreciate you listening to episode 62 of the I Can't See You podcast. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the I Can't See You podcast. Follow David on Twitter. He is at David Bench.